seem to get me smiling. Ooh, no matter what you do, be the Taylor Swift, Marilyn Manson, you're the kind of friend worth having. When I'm feeling down, you're the one I call, and it's problem solved. Yeah, it's problem solved. Ooh.
All right.
Yay. Well, hey, thanks for coming on, Lauren, and thanks for organizing this, Rebecca, because I put zero thought into this. I've been so busy lately.
It's totally fine. I think in general, you've thought about the Enneagram probably more than I have. So okay, with my prep work and your natural knowledge, we're probably on the same level.
I love it. So, Lauren, listen, you are the first ever guest on the Problem Solved segment. In fact, before right now, I didn't know how to put three people on a podcast. So welcome.
Thank you.
Will you please tell us who you are?
Sure. I am a mom and an Enneagram coach and a part-time K-12 music teacher. I live in Nashville, and I love talking about the Enneagram and helping people figure out who they are and how they can operate better in the world with some more self-awareness.
When did you first know about the Enneagram, and how has it changed things for you?
Probably a couple of years ago, I discovered it and just kind of took a test casually. And then once I started reading about myself, I had my husband take the test. We actually are the same type, which is a little strange, but it immediately opened our eyes to some things in our marriage that was like, oh, this is why this is happening.
Type are you?
We are both threes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so just as we have learned more, we've been able to have a more common language with each other and with our friends about what's going on in our hearts, and even being able to access some of those feelings, because threes tend to not recognize their feelings a whole lot. So even being aware of just that one fact has changed so much for us.
That's awesome. I love it.
Were you into it first and then he got into it? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. See, my husband, he is kind of anti-personality type. He, whenever anyone tries to say like, what are you? Are you an INFJ? He's like, I'm an NEIL. And he doesn't want to be put in a box. But he actually was the one that started talking about the Enneagram before I had ever heard about it, and was like, listen to this podcast and tell me which type you think I am. Well, that was like 9 hours I was going to have to listen to each type, and I wasn't about to do that. So
do you, what is he?
I don't think he totally knows, but after I was doing some research for myself, I think he might be a five.
Okay.
Because he's a thinker. Like, he's very, very intellectual. Is that what you would qualify as a five, Lauren?
Well, yes, they're the observer and they are in their heads a whole lot.
And he likes to gather information, right? Is that a five?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, for sure. He's like a walking Wikipedia.
Yes, that definitely sounds like a five to me.
Don't they say that like a great match is typically like your number next door?
Oh, well, it could be. I really think that any number that is in health can be a great match with any other number. But you've got some of those things where you can relate in some ways with a neighboring number and then also be able to fill in some gaps as well. So,
okay. Because I think I'm a one.
Okay.
My husband's a nine.
Okay.
And my daughter is a eight.
Okay.
And my husband and my daughter identify with one another. My husband and I identify with one another, and my daughter and I are like on different planets.
Yeah.
So anyway, that kind of lines up for me. But I might be a three, so I'm not sure. You're going to help me. But why don't we start, because we are solving problems, and Rebecca doesn't know what she is. She has no idea. So let's solve her problem first.
Okay. Lauren, what number am I?
Well, I can't type you. Only you can type you.
Bummer.
So hold it. I'm so sorry. Let me press pause again. Do you guys know each other in real life?
No, not at all.
How did you? Why are we talking to you, Lauren? I don't even really.
Because I just kept sliding into her DMs every time she'd mention the Enneagram and say, hey, I can help you with this.
I love it.
It's like a running joke on my Instagram. Like, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. I'm obsessed about light bulbs. What Enneagram number am I? And Lauren would always be like, I can help you. And then I accidentally video chatted her one night when she was in her robe. I never saw that. I never saw your robe, Lauren, but
I know.
I was like, oh no, because I didn't mean to push that button on Facebook Messenger. You can video chat people.
You know how many, like how many kids of my listeners video chat me on accident? I don't even think they know that it got done. No, I just see these random videos and I think, that poor mom, she looked away for 1 second.
Oh, yes. So
anyway, okay, great. I just was curious how we found Lauren.
How we're connected. Yes. I have heard the advice that you should not take a test. Would you agree with that, Lauren? Or do you, would you say?
I'm not going to say so firmly, do not do it. Because I think a test could be a helpful starting point, just to kind of narrow it down for you. But the thing that the tests lack is the ability to gauge the motivation. And that is what it's all about. So a lot of the behaviors might look the same in different types, but the reason why you're doing it is what makes you your type.
That's what I love about the Enneagram so much, is it helps you realize that people aren't up to no good. They just, which is what I think, is that everybody is terrible except me.
Of course.
Anyway, yes. But I love the motivation aspect of the Enneagram.
Yes, I do too. And that it can sometimes feel really exposing and really humiliating. I will say to people, read through some things and whichever one makes you the most embarrassed, that's probably a good chance that you're that one.
I remember when we were laying in our bed and we were reading the types. And my husband was kind of like, whatever, it doesn't really matter. He was not that into it. And I was reading about type one and he laughed so hard, like, oh my gosh, that is exactly you. And I was like, that, like, back off, dude. And then I started reading about a type nine and he turned beet red. Oh, he was so embarrassed. And I'm like, that's what you are. And all of a sudden it wasn't as funny anymore. Do you know what's in your deodorant? Yeah, I really didn't. But then when I looked it up, it's not good. Most of the deodorants that we use every day have aluminum, they have parabens, and a lot of harmful products that have been proven to be linked to cancer. I don't want to put that on my body. Hug Me Deodorant by Bloom is all natural, safe, and sustainable, and it really does work. Bloom cares about what we put into our bodies, and we should care about it too. So how does it work? Hug Me Deodorant by Bloom, that's B-L-U-M-E, it's made with probiotics, which is so interesting. I didn't even know you could make deodorant with probiotics. Well, the probiotics encourage your body to make more good bacteria. I was actually just teaching my patients about this the other day. Body odor is actually just the bacteria that's bad. It stinks. Well, Hug Me makes the good bacteria improve. So if your body makes less bad bacteria, you don't stink. So like I said, mainstream antiperspirants, they contain aluminum that gets absorbed into our bloodstream and it's been linked to cancer. But this Hug Me deodorant, it's been rated the best deodorant ever by the New York Post. Hug Me by Bloom helps keep you feeling good, feeling fresh, and super huggable. Right now, my listeners will get 25% off your first stick and you'll get free shipping when you text SWP to 797979. You can do it right now. This is a special offer that you can't get anywhere else, and you support this podcast when you support our sponsors. So text SWP to 797979 to get 25% off your first stick of Hug Me deodorant. And if you don't love it, return it and you'll get a full refund, no questions asked. So again, text SWP to 797979.
Well, I did my hardest not to take a test. Actually, okay. I mean, I succeeded. I did not take a test.
Well, did you do it?
Someone put a gun to my head and sat me in front of the computer.
I say tried my hardest, though, because it's hard to read through all the information and think, is this me? And what I was running into is every number sounded like me, except for two numbers. I felt like I could eliminate 5 and 7 pretty quick. Because I'm not fun and I don't think a lot.
Wow.
So
I think you're fun. I don't know. I feel like I'm disagreeing with that.
Okay, great. Then they're back on the table. I don't know. See, this was what I was running into is I would read these little descriptions and be like, yeah, that's totally me. And then I'd read the next one. I'd be like, no, that one must be me. And I did that for almost all of them.
Okay, including 9. Was that one of them that you felt like was you, the peacemaker?
I really did only eliminate 5 and 7 off the bat. But okay. As I started reading more and more, and I even took it as far as going through every single one of your Instagram posts that you have on your Enneagram page, okay, and saving the ones that stood out to me and then going back into that little saved area and see which number appeared most. Does that make sense?
And it's all of them except for 2?
No. No. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 is what I wrote it down to.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Okay. We're going to talk about stances. And stances is something that Suzanne Stabile has done a lot of work around. And it's basically being able to group the types into 3 different groups. So you have 3 different stances: the aggressive stance that are feeling repressed, the dependent stance that are thinking repressed, and the withdrawing stance, which are doing repressed. So tell me the numbers you said again. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Okay. So you've got all of the stances covered. All right. So we're going to nail it down. All right. So numbers in, let's start with 4, because that's the only one in the withdrawing stance that you pointed out. So the 4 is kind of the one that wants to be original, and they are really seeking after not being ordinary. Is that what resonates with you? What about the 4 kind of stuck out to you?
I think what sticks out to me about the 4 is that they appreciate beauty, like have a high value for beauty or aesthetic.
Yes, yes.
I don't want to stand out as a person.
Okay. Do you tend to be somewhat melancholy and enjoy melancholy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's keep going down this road. Do you tend to withdraw from people as a way to kind of go into your own emotions and go into your own feelings?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Do you sometimes feel like, or a lot of times feel like, you are difficult to understand?
Sometimes I don't understand myself. So maybe, yes. Okay. Like that I feel misunderstood by other people?
Yes.
Yes, I think so.
And because of your very deep feelings?
Right.
Okay. Do you typically avoid anything common or ordinary?
No.
Okay.
Like a good gray t-shirt.
Okay. Do you feel nostalgic a whole lot? Do you like to kind of ruminate on the past?
No, I wouldn't say so. I feel like I'm more of a present, in the present.
In the present. Okay. All right. So we'll put a pin in 4.
Okay.
The achiever 3 in me wants to like nail this down tonight so that we can like have a successful podcast. But
don't mess this up, Lauren.
I know. But it is something that could take a little bit of time and reflection. So I'm going to hopefully get you in the right direction. I would love for you to know exactly what you are by the end, but no pressure if you don't.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you are more in the present, that will bring us to 1s, 2s, and 6s, the dependent stance. So do you typically process things with thinking or feeling or like a more gut instinct?
Probably a gut instinct.
All right, so let's look at a 1 then.
Okay.
What about the 1 made you feel like this could be you?
I wrote down that they think there's, 1s think there's a correct way to do things.
Yes.
Because there is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it goes a little bit further than that too, where 1s feel like there is a morally correct way So not just the right way to load the dishwasher, but there is some moral implication to
there's a way that's closer to God and there's a way that's not.
Exactly. Do you have that sort of feeling where things are, it's right because it's right?
Now, are we taking like faith out of it and like what the Bible says?
Well, yes, let's do that. Let's just, because, you know, if we're all looking to the Bible for what actually is the truth, then we're all going to be on the same page.
That's true.
But right. ones are putting moral value on things that may not actually have it. Does that make sense?
I think I could lean that way. Yeah.
Okay.
Based on my upbringing.
Ones, kind of the key component for a one is this inner critic that is always there correcting you and seeing what needs to be corrected in the world around you. Do you see yourself with that going on?
Probably not a whole lot. I mostly criticize my husband.
Okay, but you don't have a relentless inner critic telling you what you're doing wrong?
No, I like myself.
You would know if you had an inner critic.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, I obviously, there's things I don't love about myself, but I don't feel like I really harsh down, like, you know, get myself down about it.
Okay. Ones typically do.
Okay.
Yeah. They've got, Emily, I know you said you were deciding between a one and a three. Is that present for you?
Yes. It never isn't, which is what makes me think I'm a one.
Yeah. Can you describe that a little bit for her so she can kind of hear what that's like to have that going on?
Like I'm sitting here right now and I'm just all I can see is what's wrong with the situation. Like I'm currently, my hair is not quite right. I am too hot. I am like, it's just all you see is what's missing, what's wrong, what's late, what didn't measure up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sense that from you.
I don't
Probably
either.
Not. Yeah, I can see those things, but I don't think they bother me.
All right, then let's move on from one and talk about twos. What about the two kind of made you feel like that might be me?
Well, I did write a lot of things down for twos, so that might be a good indicator. One of the things I wrote down was they ask a lot of questions to get to know someone. It's actually something that sometimes bothers me in a new relationship is I feel like they never ask me any questions. Like I'm always the one trying to get to know somebody, you know?
Oh, okay.
So I think that's why that stuck out to me is I'm always asking questions to get to know someone. Maybe that's because it's awkward when things are silent in a new friend. I don't know. Anyways, I wrote that one down. And then I also wrote down when I was looking at the paper, it moves in stress to a low 8, which I felt like that really described me is bitter, a persecutor versus a rescuer, that I refuse help. When, like, obviously when I'm, like, not doing well. Right. Those, like, really stuck out to me under the twos.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's dig in a little bit more here then. Would you say that you are generous to a fault?
No.
Okay. Is it difficult for you to identify your own needs?
Sometimes, yes. Yes. I would say I rely on Neil a lot to help me figure out why I'm in a funk or what I need right now. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, just any kind of needs, physical, emotional. Twos tend to repress their own needs because they see so many people that need help that they could help. They feel like they can't simultaneously be needy and also be helpful, which is the most important thing for a two, is to be helpful.
Okay. I don't think that's me then.
Okay.
That sounds way too nice.
Okay. So then let's look at sixes, because that's the still in that same dependent stance, which their orientation to time is the present. And so that's why we've gone from one, two, and six, since you said you tend to be more present instead of looking in the past. Do you feel like you're more present than future oriented?
Yes. Or,
all right. Well, let's look at the six and see what you think about that. The six is the loyalist, and they tend to be worst case scenario thinkers. Does that?
That's what I wrote down. That's what stuck out to me for a six.
Okay. Did you write down anything else?
No, just that.
Okay. So sixes are in the fear triad as well. So their dominant emotion that they are going to be kind of viewing the world through is fear or anxiety. Does that resonate with you, Sam?
I think so. I'm always, if I can't get a hold of Neil, he's dead on the side of the road sort of thing.
Okay.
You know, is that worst case scenario? So,
oh, yeah, I think
would
so.
Would you say that okay. Your husband dead on the side of the road would be worst case scenario?
He didn't return my text. He's dead.
Yes. It's true.
Yes. Okay. Do you find yourself sometimes suspicious of other people's motives?
Oh, yes.
Okay. We may be on the right track here.
Something.
Maybe.
I don't really want to be a six.
Oh, no. Why not?
That's how you know you might be a six.
Yeah. Yes. What part was humiliating to you about the six?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I wrote down worst case scenario. So I really don't want to live out all of the worst case scenarios in my head, but I do.
Are you kind of always looking for possible problems and threats in any situation?
Probably. Yes. Okay. I can see. Do you know in like elementary school where they gave you that sheet of paper and it said circle all the things that are dangerous and you had to find like the dryer sitting next to the bathtub? Yes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's like my living world is okay. That on paper.
Okay. So you're
always I feel like though I'm not like hyper, I'm not a helicopter parent at all where I'm like, don't stand on that. Like I let my kids climb trees, even though I can see what might happen and the unsafe thing that I should circle. I don't feel like I'm not hyper about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I think there is a misconception about sixes that their fear shuts them down. And it can, but I think sometimes sixes can be the most brave because they've thought through all of these worst case scenarios. And then they're prepared for it when it does happen because they already know what they're going to do.
Hmm. Are they good like risk management people?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Because, you know, if something is presented in the office or whatever, you're immediately looking for here's what can go wrong. Let's find a solution for it before it happens.
Makes sense. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of ringing a bell.
Okay. So are you attracted to and value loyalty?
I do. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So sixes are really faithful and dedicated to relationships and groups and causes. And that's because they find their safety within that, with safety within the group or safety being associated with a certain authority. Sixes have an interesting relationship with authority. They either gravitate towards authority very positively to find that safety, or if they suspect that authority is not good, then they're going to buck up against it.
Okay. See, I'm not sure about this one because I do feel like I rebel against authority a lot in my life, like looking back. I also don't feel like I've been very committed to groups of people, but this is terrible. This is like all my worst nightmares, but I expect the group, like people to be committed to me.
Yeah. Because loyalty and faithfulness is a value then.
It right. Sounds like. But I don't want to be tied down. You know, like, so I expect it, but I don't want to be expected to give it.
What about with your family? Do you feel very loyal and dutiful where that is concerned?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that is a group. So you may not necessarily be feeling that way towards a particular organization, but, or with your business. Do you feel like you've got a strong sense of loyalty there with the people?
I do. Yeah. But they also have a high sense of loyalty to the company, which means more like the world to me. It's just as much theirs as it is mine, you know?
Okay. Well, let's talk about, do you want to stay on sixes or do you want to explore three as well?
Let me just tell you what I wrote down for three.
Okay.
Is the efficiency aspect and the projects. I feel like I'm constantly trying to find the most efficient way to do something. And I really love finding them.
Do you feel like failure is the worst thing that could possibly happen?
No.
Okay. So a three's area of avoidance is failure, And so they are doing whatever they can. So the efficiency is to reach those goals and have those successful achievements. And that's why they're being so efficient.
Okay. So what would you say is the why for the sixes?
What is motivating them?
Yeah.
So they're motivated by that sense of loyalty, and their area of avoidance is deviance. Okay. And so that doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to ever do anything wrong, but it's kind of like perceived deviance. So like if the family is supposed to get together and they always get together, but you don't really want to, you're still going to do it as a six out of duty because you've put this value there where if I miss a family gathering, then I'm being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Does that resonate?
See, this is why it's so hard is because my parents have given us such freedom to miss gatherings.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I should be there a lot of the time if I'm not.
Well, and also think back to your early 20s. That's kind of where you're coming into your own. You've got some freedom, but you're not quite mature enough yet to have great balance. And so a lot of times looking back to how you were then can kind of give you a clear picture of at least some sort of the negative things about your type.
Right.
And sixes really want to be perceived as being obedient.
Okay.
So not necessarily exactly like a one of being right and morally right, but following the rules because that's where they find safety.
Okay. Yeah. That probably is me.
Okay.
Yay.
Did you just solve it, Lauren?
Oh, well, maybe.
Maybe. So now what, if I think I know my number, what is the next step? Just to keep reading things about that number. Now,
yes.
It's not going to be 100% all the time, probably, because I think one time you mentioned to me, well, everyone has a little bit of every number.
Right. So we all have all nine types, and we have one dominant number. And then we also have two wings on either side. So if you're a six, your options for wings would be a seven or a five.
The two numbers that I said I definitely wasn't.
Well, but that's okay, because that means that maybe those wings can help you find some balance in your own number. So the next thing that you probably want to look at is moving in stress and insecurity. So you're going to move around the Enneagram depending on what's going on in your life. So if you are a six, in stress, you're going to move to the low side of three. And in security, you're going to move to the high side of nine. So if you're in a stressful situation, going to three, you're going to speed up. You're going to become busier.
Oh, yes.
And then you want to avoid, so you're already trying to avoid rebellion as a six. And that is going to press even deeper when you're in stress and try to avoid failure too. You're going to kind of lump that on top of it. And you'll start to try to win over authority by working hard and being faithful.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds a lot like me, except for the avoiding rebellion.
Okay.
But again, not all of it has to be exactly.
Right. Well, yeah. Here's my next thought. So sixes are special because they have kind of two different types of sixes. There's a phobic six. And then there's a counterphobic six. The counterphobic deals with their fear in a more aggressive way and tends to do things that challenge the things that they fear. So if they're afraid of, you know, heights, they might go skydiving. Like that's a really extreme example.
Sure.
But a counterphobic six is also going to be the one that's bucking up against authority. And I think you mentioned before that you kind of see that in yourself a little bit.
Yes.
So that might be something to look into.
Okay.
So you're going to want to explore how you move in security and stress. And then you may want to read up a little bit on subtypes.
Okay.
Subtypes are based off of our three main instincts as people. So we've got the instinct to have self-preservation, the instinct to be in a social group, and then the instinct to have a deep one-on-one intimate connection. So sometimes that's called one-to-one or sexual. So, and if you just Googled, and I can send you some stuff, but if you Googled like subtypes for sixes, you'll come up with plenty of things to read. And sixes, depending on your subtype, can look kind of different. So that may help you identify yourself even stronger there.
So basically we could go as deep with this as you want.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Now I also read that which we're breaking all the rules here, but you shouldn't tell anyone your number.
Well, that is kind of the traditional. So here's a teeny tiny history lesson. So the Enneagram has been an oral tradition for centuries, and it was passed down a lot through the Catholic priests, and they would tell you the only number that you even need to learn about is your own number. And that's why they're saying not to tell other people. But as we've kind of brought it into more modern times and people have had access to learning all nine, there have been, I feel like, really good advantages to being able to see the world through other people's lenses by knowing the lens that they're seeing everything through. Mm-hmm. So I think the danger with, you know, going, oh, well, you're a six, so you're automatically this, sure. You know, and I think that's maybe why people would say that.
That makes sense. They could use it against me. Now the whole internet can use this against me.
That's right. So you're being such a six.
Well, that's exciting. I love that. I don't know. I love that you are. Do you feel like you are a six?
I want to do more reading. I think there's a lot of things that like resonate with a six. So yeah, I just need to do some more reading.
Do you have any more questions for Lauren about it?
What is the best way for someone to find their number? Just to read all the descriptions? Do you suggest reading a book, just spending? Because I honestly feel like I've been trying to figure out my number longer than anyone in the entire world.
Sometimes it takes people a year to really figure it out. I mean, because it's digging deep into those motivations and really taking the time to self-reflect too, mm-hmm. and go, why am I actually doing the things that I'm doing? So I like to send people to the Enneagram Institute website. It's got descriptions for all the types. It also has some fun relationship comparisons. So like if you think your husband is a five and you think you're a six, you could go and read mm-hmm. how does a six mm-hmm. and a five interact? Mm-hmm. And it's very telling if you nail it down, because it talks about, you know, how they're really great together and then some possible trouble spots as well. So the Enneagram Institute is a great resource online. If you wanted a book, The Road Back to You by Ian Morgan Cron and Suzanne Saville is kind of the baseline that most people go to. It's a very simple, easy to understand breakdown. And it's just a good primer for just learning about each of the numbers.
Do you have any questions, Emily? I hijacked this whole thing.
Oh no, I was so excited. I believe that I'm a one.
Okay.
But when you talk, because of the perfectionism and moral, like I can tell you why the reason that I do things is because it's just clearly the right thing. There's not even a question in my mind. However, I resonate with a three because of the idea of failure and appearances. And like for me, looking a certain way is very important, but I think it may be because I believe there's a moral right way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like even, and I'm constantly beating myself up. In fact, when people get to know me, I know they're really seeing me when they go, wow, you're really hard on yourself. Then I go, yes, now you know me. Now you really see me. But I don't know. So I'm leaning towards one, but I'm not sure.
Here's the difference between a three and a one. When a three is cleaning their house and getting ready for people to come over, there's always going to be that one room that nobody gets to see because everything just gets crammed back there. But the place that they're allowing people to see is okay and is looking really, really good. But for a one, there is this need to have a clean house because that's just what you do. And that is the right thing to do. And ones do not like to cut corners at all. And threes will cut corners if it is a faster way to success. even if it compromises things a little bit.
Wow. See, that's really fascinating because to me, in my house, wherever people are coming, it does have to be clean. The surfaces must be clean. Everything needs to be organized. But inside the cabinets, it is a disaster. And the closets are a wreck. And that's fine with me.
Okay. Well, that may just be a healthier one. but so why is the house clean? What's the motivation for having a clean house when somebody comes over?
Well, the first thing I think of is it's the right thing to do. But then the second thing I think of is, what will people think if it's not? Do you see what I'm saying?
So is it, what will people, will someone think I'm bad? Or is it, I can't be a success and I can't shine if it's that way?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel both of those. It's okay. Very confusing to me.
Okay. So a one does not want to be bad. So yeah. They've got messaging from early on that you need to be a good girl or a good boy. And so they want to be right at all times. So they're going to avoid anything that doesn't fit into that good boy or good girl category. Mm-hmm. And so they will do something called reaction formation when they feel any anger or any negative thought coming up, they're going to force themselves to do the opposite of that to avoid the thing that might make them a bad girl or a bad boy.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that I should be able to be mad.
Okay, well, that is the main area of avoidance for one is anger.
But so, I definitely angry. So I know that a one turns it inward and they're mad at themselves and they get bitter.
Yes.
But what's a three doing?
Mad at everyone else. Threes ignore all feelings and work harder. Oh, like if somebody said to me as a three, are you mad? I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know because I haven't stopped. Threes have a very, very difficult time identifying what they're actually feeling if they don't stop and take the time to identify what it is.
See, this is hard for me because I am angry, but I do know it, but I also don't stop. Does that make sense?
Well, and you may be working very hard to do the good things to kind of calm down that sense of self anger that's going on inside.
Yeah, I do. I think I'm a one.
Yeah, I think so too, just based on what you're saying. Yeah. If you've got that present anger and if you've got that inner critic going.
Mm-hmm. Her name's Maud.
Well, nobody else has a mod. Only ones have mods. So yeah. If you've got her going in your head all the time, unless you had a really strong one parent, you might have them going in your head all the time.
Oh,
but
no.
But for ones, it's a constant.
Well, the real question is, do ones wax their legs at a friend's picnic in the backyard? Because Emily does that.
Here's what's so funny, though, is that for me, I'm fine if it's not perfect, if what I'm trying to show is imperfection.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So then I'm nailing it. Good. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yes. Especially because I feel like in our culture, particularly modern Christian culture, we've got this thing with vulnerability. And so it's okay. So you can present something that is not quite as perfect for the sake of vulnerability and transparency.
So that's why you call your podcast Struggling Well.
Right.
Because then you can struggle well perfectly because you've already said you're a mess.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And for threes in that kind of situation, like we can curate some vulnerability of, you know, well, I had this failure or whatever, but I'm not going to ever tell you what's actually going on under the surface that is a present failure. So you can have some things that you're kind of comfortable sharing because you've had victory over that, or you've gotten okay with that part of you not being okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. No. Okay. So I think I'm a one. I have another question that I've always struggled with, and this feels very embarrassing to even ask.
Okay.
So as a one who thinks everything is a moral right or wrong.
Uh-huh.
It makes me think I'm only a Christian because I'm a one. I don't understand why anybody else would be a Christian if you didn't have this nagging all the time and this need to be morally right. I've just never understood how people don't believe in God or don't want to know who God is. Because as even the littlest I can remember, being a 4-year-old and wanting to know who is God, what's the right thing to do, what will make me good. And so learning about the Enneagram makes me think, you've only ever wanted to do this because you are one. So knowing about the Enneagram has sometimes made me be like, is that why I'm a Christian? Is
that well, weird? But here's the wonderful thing about God and the Holy Spirit is that he is coming after us. And so I think he can use any aspect of our personality to come after us. So you've got this innate sense of you want to be good and right because you know there's things that are wrong with you, mm-hmm. and you need someone to fix you because you can't do it on your own. So ones will try to perfect themselves, but they can't do it. You know, for threes, we want to be successful, and God's going to come at us from that angle of, you know, in our deepest failure, Jesus has had all the success we ever need. Mm. So you're processing faith and God through your lens, you know, and I think the Spirit can use whatever lens the Enneagram we are using to bring us to himself.
Yeah, that's good.
Do you have a, you know how on your Instagram you have, you type every, like you do a little box for different categories of things. Do you have one about what the gospel means to each number or like what attracts someone to each number to the gospel? Because I feel like that would be really helpful for me.
Yes. Too. So that's, I have not put that on Instagram yet. That is kind of the work that I am doing right now. I'm testing. Yeah. I'm testing out a coaching series with people where we explore each type's core idol, and then the defense mechanism and area of avoidance we use and how Jesus redeems all of that so that we can properly reflect the attribute of God that's connected with our type.
That's really cool.
So yeah, as soon as I've gotten it all kind of worked out, I'm going to start posting it on Instagram because this is kind of the work that I've been concentrating on. I think each teacher kind of picks something that seems interesting to them. And this is kind of what I'm going with.
Where can people find you on Instagram?
So you can find me on Instagram at Lauren Elkins Gray or on my website, www.laurenelkinsgray.com.
Gray is A-Y, right?
Yes, A-Y.
It has been so helpful to talk to you.
Yes. Thank you. I'm so glad. It was so fun.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Well, I'm sorry that we're out of time, but...
I know.
We're out of time.
I know. We'll have to have like part 2 and 3.
Part Absolutely. 2 and 3.
But maybe just privately, because I don't know that anyone wants to listen to all my deepest issues.
Oh, no, they do.
They probably do.
They super do.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. You have really solved some problems for us. It's good to finally get some problems solved, isn't it, Rebecca?
Finally, we have the problems that need solved. I know.
Well, I'm happy to do it.
Helping people with their problems, but we don't know a thing about them. Take a shot and we'll laugh all the way. Helping people with their problems, but we don't know a thing about them. Take a shot and we'll laugh all the way. Ooh, you always seem to get me smiling. Ooh, no matter what you do.